On this episode of Rock Down South, we sit down with Jay Allen. We have a really good time on this episode, so you definitely don't want to miss it. We hope y'all enjoy. Let's go.
Hey y'all, this is Jay Allen, and you're listening to Rock Down South.
Welcome to another exciting episode of Rock Down South, your home for rock and country music. Today, we have the pleasure of speaking with country artist Jay Allen. And Jay is a super talented country artist that has been around for a little bit, but he has a fantastic catalog of music and has actually had some songs and videos go viral with millions of views. He's an avid supporter of Alzheimer's research and has raised tens of millions of dollars for the cause. And we talk all about that, his background, his time on The Voice, and his new Christmas rendition of Oh Holy Night that he just released with Ali Colleen. So without further ado, here's the show. What's up, Jay? How you doing today, man?
Mark, how are you, man? It's good to be on here, brother.
Hey, I'm glad to have you on here. I'm doing absolutely great, except for, football was not the best in our favor for the University of Georgia over the weekend.
Oh, man, apologies for that, brother. I got the dogs in my heart. I lived in Georgia for a couple of years, so. Yeah, rough day.
Rough day. But I know you're originally from Iowa. Where in Iowa did you grow up in?
Yeah, I'm actually going to Des Moines tomorrow. I was born in Iowa City, go Hawks. And then actually grew up in around the Cedar Falls area. Went to the University of Northern Iowa. So they're known for Kurt Warner. And let's see who else. Slipknot is from there as well. So, man, believe it or not, Slipknot. No one's ever heard of Cedar Falls, Iowa, unless you know football. But Slipknot recorded their first ever record in Cedar Falls.
That's nuts. You know, it's funny. I have on my notes to ask you about Slipknot being one of the main musicians coming out of Iowa. I kid you not, because I even looked this up. There's not a whole lot of musicians that have come out of Iowa, unfortunately. And Slipknot's on the top of the list on every single regular article.
Yeah, there's not a lot of anyone that kind of got out of Iowa. When I was 16, I always had this like just innate feeling I just was gonna go. I didn't know why or where. I was 16 years old. I moved out. I just didn't even tell them. I just left. I moved to Arkansas for a little bit and didn't last very long there. And then Atlanta, and then Savannah, and then back to Iowa. And now I've been in Nashville for 10 years. So, but you know, Iowa, it used to be that place that I ran away from that I never wanted to go back to. And now it's where I came from. It's home, you know, so it will always be a special place to me, especially now that I have a baby nephew from there. He just had his birthday today. He turned 2. So, where you come from is definitely becoming more and more important to me over time.
Oh yeah, for sure. For sure. It's definitely as you get older. It's just kind of one of those things.
Yep.
Since we're on the topic of Slipknot, were you a big fan of them when they were in the area, in the scene?
It's something that everyone's just like proud of that they're from there, or something that like people like, because it's also like, you know, Iowa, you know, middle America, it's all about like family and church and faith and like squeaky clean and sports. And so it's like, you also have the community of people that are just like, we don't want to talk about that because Slipknot, they're kind of scary. And I'm a huge fan. Anything rock and roll, I'm a fan of. I'm kind of just like a complex human when it comes to my music taste. Mama introduced me to country music when I was a kid. It was all about country radio. There was a older couple that started taking me to church when I was a kid. So I ended up becoming a music director at a mega church later on in life. And then my dad is a hippie. So my dad is covered in tattoos. They're terrible tattoos. He has he had a mullet back when mullets were cool the first time. Now I think they're going out of style again for the second time. But he brought we lived in a little town, Waterloo, Iowa. I was pretty young, man. I was like 10 years old. And he comes downstairs. This is my dad, just always a big goofball, and I love him to death. Came downstairs with this crazy mullet. He had a jean jacket on with the collar popped and this weird-looking smirk on his face. And he had a little matching jean jacket for me. He goes, put this on. I'm going to take you to your first concert tonight. So he rolled up the windows, and this, I don't know if I can say this, but he hotboxed me all the way to Kansas opening up for Styx, and we fist bumped him, Mr. Roboto, so hard that night. he has the coolest vinyl collection I've ever seen. Hopefully, you know, I can get my hands on that someday. Just everything rock and roll I fell in love with because of him, the look, you know, leather and motorcycles and fast cars and guitars. And so yeah. Our show is very, you know, so, you know, talk about Slipknot, you know, I just, anything that's rock and roll is just kind of bled into me, you know, even though I'm known for my heartfelt songs, our live show is very rock and roll. It's, you know, I love guys like Chris Daughtry, Matchbox 20, and Three Doors Down. And I actually just got to open up for Matchbox 20 like a month and a half ago in Fort Myers, which was
a moment.
So, yeah, man, I love rock and roll. So, yeah, Slipknot fan, yes, 1,000%.
Well, this is the podcast for you, Rock Down South. So, you know, we're all about the rock and the country music. I've seen Slipknot probably 3 or 4 times throughout
my life. What's your favorite rock band?
Oh, man. You know, that's a tough one. It really depends on what mood I'm in, whether I'm into country or rock. But, you know, I'm a huge fan of the 80s rock as well. So, like, a Def Leppard or a Motley Crue would be up there. It's kind of what I listened to in high school, Metallica. You know, those
kind of folks. Did you see Motley Crue's their movie that they put out on Netflix? What do you think about that?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I saw the movie. I've seen them a bunch of times. I saw them at the stadium tour with Def Leppard when they came through.
If they really threw TVs out windows in hotel rooms.
So you can read the book about that, The Dirt, which I read back in high school. I probably shouldn't have been reading it, but it's based off of that book, and the book is wild. They did a lot of crazy stuff.
Yeah, man. I mean, we, like, everyone does crazy stuff on the road. I got out of my system as fast as possible. Just watching that movie, I was just like, dang, did they really do that stuff? That is wild. They sleep a couple hours and then go back to, you know, to rock and roll. They sleep till like 5 at night and then go back. It's like crazy, man. And we don't live in that world anymore. You know, we can't, especially in, you know, country music, it's, you can't get away with stuff like that. You know, everyone has a phone these days too and wants to, you know, put you on the internet and disgrace you immediately.
Yep.
But yeah.
It was a time. You can't really get away with it anymore with the modern age. But switching it up a little bit, is it true that you went to be a worship leader in Savannah before you moved to Nashville?
Yeah. You know, it's crazy. That was before my skull tattoos. I've lived a couple different lives. I've had to explain that to my wife, Kylie, a few times. But, I ended up there. I was actually in Atlanta. And I was what they call a contract worship leader. So it is a different world there. There's several mega churches, quote unquote, in that area. And they'll basically hire out musicians and worship leaders to come, to contract you to come. So I would play I would lead 5 or 6 services a week and kind of cut my chops. It really taught me a lot about, you know, being on stage and having a presence and being a good performer. Taught me a lot about the church too. That may be another story.
Yeah, I live in Atlanta. I've been to a lot of the mega churches around there. So,
yeah, we won't say names. We won't say names. I ended up, you know, getting an offer from, it used to be called Savannah Christian Church, mega church down there. And it was perfect because my ex at the time, she adored Savannah and wanted to be there so badly. So she wanted to meet Paula Deen. So I was like, okay, whatever. So I got there, got the job. It was all right. You know, again, like, cutting my chops there, fell in love with Savannah, really fell in love with Georgia being in Savannah. And then, believe it or not, we met Paula Deen and became friends with her. It's the weirdest thing ever.
No way.
Yeah, weirdest thing ever, man. I was walking my dogs one night and I don't know if you've ever been downtown historic Savannah, but it is literally frozen in time, right? So we have courtyards and squares. And so I was walking in the back courtyard with my dogs and I ran into a neighbor and made friends. And he's like, y'all should come over for dinner sometime. So come to find out, he was the personal assistant, like creative director for Paula Deen, invited us to one of her parties out on Whitmarsh Island. And then I walk up to this place. I'm like, I've never seen a house this big in my life. And not a leaf on a sidewalk. It was pristine. We walk in and we're just like, well, how did we get in here? And then suddenly Brandon, comes up to us. He's like, all right, it's your time to meet Paula Deen. I'm like, our time? Okay. So we go back there and she's basically having like a party in her bathroom, which is like her bathroom is like the size of my house. Like she has a talking toilet with XM radio. Like, yeah, there's like French doors in the back and like a fireplace in the middle and people walking around with fancy cocktail glasses with the pinkies out. And I swear to God, that's how it went down. She came up to me. She goes, she grabbed me. She spun me around. She slapped my ass. And she said, all right, Jay, you can stay, honey. We like you. All right. So that turned into a friendship with her and had some really good and weird times.
That's hilarious. Oh, my gosh.
So, yeah, we like Georgia.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's fantastic. You like have a soft spot for Georgia and know the Atlanta area since living here. That's incredible.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Buckhead Mall. We like Buckhead.
And so then I think you moved to Nashville. And then I know you got some traction in Nashville before going on The Voice and stuff. I think that was in like 2022. But I was listening to your catalog again recently. And the song Top It Off, I remember this song from a little while ago. I love this song. Wasn't this on the radio?
So we had a batch of songs. Super, super long story short, you know, I came to town with doing what everyone was doing and really like struggling. I literally came to town with, I left my ex and came to town with a suitcase and a guitar to my name. And just started doing what everyone does and just grinding and writing and working my ass off. And I eventually, along the way, a couple years in, I got my first publishing deal. Through that publishing deal, I started writing with a producer and he helped me get a deal at Sony. So I was writing for Sony and we put together this EP. And it was like really fun. Like it was kind of like modern alt rock meets like modern pop country radio. Like the two kind of made a baby. And very, very clean, but still kind of had an edge to it. And we had a buddy that wrote a song with us called Sounds Good to Me that was in that batch of songs that Top It Off was in. And he sent it over to his friend that was the programming director for SiriusXM and the Highway at the time. And this dude literally called me from New York City, like in the middle of the night, like half drunk. He's like, Jay, I love your song. I'm going to make you the highway find. I was like, I don't know what that is, but thank you. And so before I knew it, I had a song getting spun on SiriusXM the highway on the country station, had me on it, kind of set me up. You know, we still end our whole show with that song. We play Top It Off, but we end with Sounds Good to Me.
Sounds
like
good.
Big one off that record. Yeah. And it kind of set the tone for like our sound, like I said, like alt rock meets country radio pretty much. So, and it's just, you know, funny how that happened. And we've released a lot of songs since then. Very few like those two, but Top It Off, I love that you brought that up because that's actually the song that made my wife apparently fall for me. I have no idea how. She was like, I heard that song and I just knew. I was like, okay.
That's funny. Yeah. I don't know how, but I remember listening to that song like a bunch back when it came out. I don't know if it was on the radio, if it was streaming or something, or maybe added it to a playlist or something. Awesome. But I remember listening to that one, which I thought was funny because I don't think it's listed as one of your top songs. You have a lot of great songs out now.
Thanks, brother. Yeah, we're still, you know, I'm just now really starting to fully make a push as an artist. I really had I will always be a philanthropist, right? And that's really where I found my footing. You know, when I lost my mom, I wrote a song called Blank Stairs. And I, you know,
raised millions of dollars for Alzheimer's,
we've helped raise another great year. We've helped raise over $100 million in a couple of years' time to fight against Alzheimer's. I partnered with the National Alzheimer's Association. We've done a lot of good. This last year specifically has been great for us. We actually have now treatments available, which we've been trying to, you know, get there for a while, but now you have to go through hoops and loops and the FDA has finally approved a few of them. So it's been a really great year for us. $100 million is a lot of money. I never thought I would get to be a part of saying that I've been a part of, you know, that amount of money or raising amount of that money. But, you know, it's still not enough. You know, there's 40 years we've been working on trying to, you know, fund research to find a cure for Alzheimer's and we still haven't found it. Some days I'm beating my head against the wall, like how much more can I do? You know, so that will always be a part of, that will be the biggest part of what I do. I'm just now getting around to, I signed a record deal at the end of last year when I came off The Voice. you know, we've been trying to navigate the what's next, you know. So I obviously, you know, I have a career in music and, you know, I want to tour. That's how I make my living is touring. But also I want to always tie it to how can I utilize my music to help others and to make some sort of mark in the world. And so I was like, okay, let's take this song. I have this song called No Present Like the Time. I'm trying to get it on country radio, you know? And so now we're, you know, we finally got that song on country radio. We're an independent label with an independent radio team. It's going to be a very long haul for us, but I got that far. So now I'm already thinking about what's next. And I want to put out more songs that have that kind of feel that are, you know, what my live show is, like I was saying, it's really alternative rock meets country radio. Get back to kind of my, you know, my roots, which is my mother, country radio, my dad, hippie, rock and roller, you know, combined, which I think is so cool. He still stands in, he's in the front row. Every time we come to the Midwest, my dad is in the front row. He dresses like Johnny Cash and he fist bumps and sings every word. It's hilarious to watch and we party with him. But there's definitely more songs coming like that, man. So I'm glad that you know, you could top it off. I'm just like, man, I'm so glad that music like that still resonates.
Yeah, that's a good song. And, you know, much love and thanks so much for all the hard work you've been doing for Alzheimer's and Alzheimer's research and raising money for that. That's absolutely fantastic. We need more people doing that sort of thing with these awful diseases, especially that one being one of the most debilitating.
Thank you.
And emotionally draining. So thank you so much for that from the bottom of everybody's hearts. That's very much needed. It sounds like philanthropy is like a major push in your life. Does it feel good giving back, or is it something you feel you can't ever give enough?
Yeah, it's honestly the biggest reward in life. I feel when you are able to utilize the gifts you've been given, the talent, the resources, the relationships, and you're able to hone it in, put it to a place where you're benefiting more than just yourself. Mm-hmm. You know, like I decided a long time ago, I want to lay my head down at night and know that I've given my all that day to try to do something that's better than me, you know, that's bigger than me, that can, you know, that can benefit someone else outside of my small little world, you know. And sometimes you don't feel it. There's tough days where, but, you know, now, you know, I even do speaking events where I, you know, I talk to people who even own like care facility centers or even like, you know, caregivers and nurses. Like a lot of times they don't see outside of their own space, outside of their own circle, their own community, but every little good that you do, it's like a ripple effect, you know. Like I will hear years down the road, we listen to that song every day, Blank Stares. That's the one thing that gave us hope, you know, feeling that we're not alone, that you went through it and other people are going through it, you know. And for me, that's the biggest reward. Because I'm human, I think we're all human. We'll never feel like if you want to do good in the world and help others, you'll never feel like you can do enough. But to me, it's just like, okay, like I'm just going to keep moving forward, you know. And I've seen the good that's come from it by me sharing something that's not easy to share, you know, like literally at the end of every single one of my shows at the, during every interview, I made a promise to my mom on her deathbed, not to be morbid, but I would tell this story, you know. And now I get to raise my head and realize, oh my gosh, we've taken our pain and turned it into something beautiful, you know? So it will always be philanthropy. It will always be something that I do. And not just Alzheimer's, you know, Kylie, Morgan and I, my wife, we just got back from an event in Maui. It was our 1-year anniversary. Kylie surprised me. She teed it up perfectly, which we like to combine work and play. Who doesn't? Right? So she's like, let's go celebrate our 1-year wedding anniversary in Maui. It's a free trip in exchange for us playing a show to raise money for the victims of the fires. And I was like, oh my gosh. I literally was just like almost in tears because that's what it's all about. How can you combine everything? Yep. How can you put it all together? Work and play, you know, how can you, you know, you know, help, you know, take care of your own back, but, and also help, you know, take care of others. So we just did that. We got one coming up. You know, basically everything that I do is tied to a charity, you know, somehow or some way. I'd say 90% of what I do. We got one coming up here in Nashville, actually, at Belmont University. They're putting on a huge concert. There's like 800 attendees. And it's called Hope for the Holidays. And there's three different charities involved, not just Alzheimer's. So now I'm getting to utilize all that I've learned as a philanthropist and apply it to other things, you know, other causes, which is pretty cool, man. Kind of just feel very grateful for the experience and what we're able to do through music. You know, what we're able to do right now, just having like a conversation. Thank you for creating a platform, Rock Down South, where we can have conversations. You never know who's going to hear this. And, you know, get us, you know, just like maybe they needed to hear exactly this today. So thank you for creating this platform to share these things.
Absolutely. And what you're doing is fantastic. And I really liked how you hit on putting your talents to benefiting others and kind of finding that space in there where there's some synergy. For that, we're all about that. We put on in March, I'd never put on a concert, but we did a writer's round in March here in Atlanta with about 13 artists from Nashville and a bunch of really big people that came down, and we raised $10,000 for Make-A-Wish.
Come on.
So we're going to do that again. I partnered with Make-A-Wish Georgia for that. So we're going to do it again. And that's what we're trying to do on our side to try to give back and, you know, to a good organization to try to make a difference. Brother.
Proud of you, man. You know, I know a guy that would love to do that. So sign me up for next year.
Let's do it, man. Let's do it. So getting back to things, The Voice, you did it in 2022. But as somebody who already had a little bit of success under your belt at that time, a lot of people think of these talent competitions as people who are, you know, just fresh out of the box. But that's not realistic, because most everybody's got a past in music. But what was the kind of idea of going on The Voice at that point in your career?
Yeah, so to divulge now, I'm not going outside of contract, or I would tell this to the producers' faces. They know they have a talent agency that's involved, and they scout out artists and they scout out singers, contestants that have a story. It's a storyline focused show because storylines create drama, and drama creates good ratings. So I have a story. So. I was called once a year for the last 4 years, and I politely declined every year. I literally just I remember the first year I laughed. The second year I was like kind of annoyed. The third year I was just like really like, and at that point I felt like they were kind of upset with me. And then finally they called me, and I'm glad they kept calling me and were so persistent, because God's timing was perfect. You know, I got to a place where I was kind of an in-betweener. I didn't have any deals in place. I was really doing everything on my own. I was crushing it on the road, but I was tired because I didn't have anyone helping me. I didn't even have a great manager. And they called me, and I was like, you know what? I think this will give me the opportunity to hit the refresh button on my career, on my music career, and maybe open up some more doors. And then, you know, the main thing is what better way to put more eyes and ears on this cause, this thing that I've been fighting for with my everything the last few years, than to go on this show? So I kind of made a deal with them, you know, behind the scenes with the executive producers. I said, I'll do your show, but, you know, let me share the story and sing the song. They're like, Jay, that's why we want you. I was like, I figured that. All right. So they didn't tell me when they were going to let me sing Blank Stairs, but I knew I was at some point going to be able to sing it, but they actually surprised me. So for the blind auditions, like, I'm an artist. Go ahead.
Yeah, the blind audition, Gwen and Blake turn around their chair, chatted with you, and then you get to do the song.
Yeah, man. So you can only prep for that so much, you know, until you I walked out there, like, because they have to like sound check you and do like a quick rehearsal. And I walked out and I was like, hey, like, I just want to do this. I want to do Till You Can't, you know, I did Till You Can't by Cody Johnson. Actually, I chose that song because I know, you know, one of the songwriters. I actually know both the songwriters, but one of them is a good friend of mine. I love the story behind it. I actually told him that I was going to do that song. He teared up and said that him, his other co-writer, had, you know, talked, you know, they'd actually talked about me and my mother in the room when they're writing that song, which I thought, I had no idea. And so that song ended up going number one after I was on The Voice. But so a lot of reasons why I chose that song. But I remember walking out on stage with the band. I was like, hey, guys, like, I really would rather just do this acoustic, just me and my guitar. And they fought me tooth and nail, and I couldn't understand why. I ended up just giving in because I'm just like, okay, they know what they're talking about. This is the band that backs The Voice, the backing band, is the same band for Pink. So they've been with Pink. I think the band director for Pink has been with them for 16 years and been with The Voice the whole time. So I'm like, okay, the guy obviously knows what he's talking about. I'm going to do whatever he has. But come to find out, it's because they wanted to have John, a legend, turn around and ask me to do Blank Stairs. So it was a perfect segue to do Till You Can't with the band. And then I had the opportunity to do Blank Stairs, really stripped down and acoustic. And they're so intelligent on how they figure out how to showcase artists and raise up vocalists and tell your story in such a beautiful way. And I was actually surprised. I had no idea that was the moment. And so, you know, I'm glad that it went down the way that it did. And I actually announced on the show, I thought for a fact that, you know, I kind of kept my eye on things over the years. And, you know, I say yes to everything, like I said, and we've done so many events, so many galas and fundraisers, and all these things. I'm like, oh, okay, I helped raise about $50 million. So I announced that on the show. And then before they aired it, the blind audition, their legal counsel contacted me. And they're like, we need to get in touch with your attorney because we need to do a fact check to make sure that you actually have, in fact, raised $50 million. And I was like, oh, shit, I hope I'm right. So I called my attorney, put him in touch, and he called me 3 days later. And he said, Jay, you'll never believe this. You've raised double that, my friend.
Oh my gosh.
Wow. So, you know, I, you know, it's one of those things where like I've just kept my head down for so long and just grinded and really not tried to help myself, try to help everyone else. And it's paid off. You know, we've made a little bit of a dent, you know. Now I get to meet researchers on the road, even just like sitting at a bar somewhere after a show. And, you know, if you're in the Alzheimer's community, you may be aware of me. So they spot me and be like, you're Jay, you help, you know, fund our program. Or we just met someone in Maui on a boat. Kylie and I were out on a boat and just taking kind of a day off to enjoy ourselves on an anniversary. And one of the lead researchers was on the boat, called me out. She goes, you've helped fund the program that I'm entering into. And I was just like, wow. You know, and so I thank The Voice for that opportunity because it helped kind of, like I said, you know, put a refresh on me and, you know, bring attention to this disease and, you know, put a light on me. And every time a light put on me, I'm going to try to shine on someone. So, man, nothing but a beautiful experience. I credit The Voice and all the producers involved. They told me from the beginning, they told us all, our goal is to not humiliate you. Even if something goes down, if you get kicked off, whatever, our goal is to raise you up and help you and help elevate you. And they did just that. So we love The Voice.
Yeah, it's an awesome audition video, and I'm glad you got to share that story and put that song on that first video, because I'm sure that's the one that has more views than any of the others. So,
well, that was the purpose. That was really the reason why I went on. Once that was done, I was like, I'm done. Literally, I told the producers behind the scenes, I'm like, I'm good. Like, I can go home now. Yeah.
But you had between Gwen Stefani and Blake Shelton to pick from, and you chose Gwen. Tell me about that decision.
Oh, yeah, I did it on purpose. And I told them all I was going to. They're just like, who would you pick if you had to choose? And I was like, Gwen. I was like, every singer that's on here that's country, calls themselves country, they're from Nashville, Texas, Georgia, they're going to pick Blake and they're going to go with him. Like, okay, so then I'm going to get swallowed up, you know, like I'm not going to get any time with the coach at all. Like everyone's, you know, going to choose him. So I'm like, I'm going to go with Gwen, you know, cause I'll be the odd man out. And then I was like, I have a massive crush on Gwen Stefani. And then I brought it up to Kylie and she goes, you better choose Gwen. She's so hot. Yeah. So I know everyone's like confused by that, but I definitely had a game plan. And then I assumed, like, you know, the conversations you have behind the scenes with the producers and the whole process, they kind of hint towards where they want to like push you towards and what they want you to do. They never tell you exactly what to do, but they kind of coach you and encourage you to do certain things. So it was very much so like everyone knew that if I had the opportunity to go to Blake, I was going to jump over to Blake. And so it worked out perfectly and it was hilarious how they did it. And so, and then Blake and Gwen ended up coming and surprising me. Blake called, which is a weird phone call to get, and personally invited me to play his hometown, Old Red, in Tishomingo, Oklahoma, which ended up being the last show of the year for me last year. And I immediately said yes. I'm like, how do you say no to that? And then I was like, I hung up the phone and I was like, oh, shit. I have a show the night before in Albuquerque, New Mexico, and it's going to go late. How in the hell am I going to get the sound check on time in Tishomingo, Oklahoma? So we decided, okay, we already said yes, and we got to do it. So we played the show. We packed up. And then we drove all the way through the night, checked into the hotel, went and sound checked. So we're sound checking in Tishomingo, Oklahoma, this Old Red, and me and my guitarist. And I'm just like, okay, I've played a lot of venues, but this one seems odd. There's like people like waxing the floor and like looking at tables and like making sure everything is flawless. Everyone's being super OCD, right? And so I'm like, this feels odd. And I didn't think twice about it because I'm an idiot. But on the way back to the hotel, my guitarist was like, I wonder if Blake's going to show up to this. I was like, why would he show up to this? And so we go get ready. We come back to the green room and my guitarist is in front of me. We walk. It's like a basement green room. So we walk down these stairs from outside. We walk down to the green room and my guitarist turns around, looks at me with these wide eyes. He goes, who's that cute blonde on the couch? And I peek around his shoulder and I was like, bro, that is Gwen Stefani. And I look up and Blake Shelton is right next to her. He has his white beard grown out, wearing his camo jacket. And she's in a hoodie, and they're just chilling. They're sitting there with a smile on their face. They're like, surprise. So they went out of their way to surprise me and showed up. And, you know, they talked to everyone that was there, signed everything, introduced me on the stage. And I was just like, man, it was, you know, really cool to see them in action working. You know, because when you're on the camera, you got to turn it on, and they're really, really good at it. But it was really awesome for me to see them behind the scenes and, you know, get to know them as real people. And they really are. I feel like when they decide to care about someone, they really are genuine. They're very genuine to me and kind of, you know, helped me out a lot there at the end of the year last year, which is awesome. So
that's an incredible story, man. Wow.
Yeah.
Let's talk about the new music. You've been putting out a lot of new music recently. We talked about a little bit of it. But the brand new song that you just put out, Christmas song, your version of Oh Holy Night with Ali Colleen.
Yep.
Why'd you guys want to record this one? I mean, there's a lot of versions out there. I personally enjoyed this version a lot because you had the duo aspect to it, which I think was really cool and different. But tell me about the thoughts about recording this one.
Yeah, so I've never done a duet before. So it's kind of, you know, I've danced around it. And Kylie, my wife and I, Kylie Morgan, she signed to EMI, and she's a little badass. Obviously, her and I want to do something. The timing is just not right yet, so we'll probably do something next year. I've been dancing around who would be a good fit for me for a duet. And my new agent, Jeff Hill, here in Nashville, he also represents Ali Colleen. So he brought her up so many times, and finally I checked her out, and I was like, I love this girl's voice, and she's covered in tattoos, and she wears black. And that's, like, literally me. So I'm like, okay. And she has a throat tattoo of a butterfly. I was like, this girl is so badass. And then I just fell in love with her voice. And so we connected the dots and got into the studio. And I was just like, you know, praying that our voices meshed. And they did. And brought my manager in. My producer was just like, we got something here. So our idea was everyone knows Oh Holy Night. There's countless versions out there, but we wanted something that was a little like haunting, a little like different, you know. And that's the imagery that goes along with it as well. We shot all the photos and the cover art in like an old warehouse here in Nashville, wearing black, got the tattoos showing. And then, you know, Ali will never say, you know, who her parents are, and I'm not going to say it on this interview because I actually respect the crap out of her that she never brings it up, and she hasn't made a name for herself by telling anyone who she is. All I have to say is do some digging on who Ali is and you'll be blown away. She is a gem of a human being, comes from an awesome family, and I could not be more proud of this song. And I always say this, like, I don't care how many, you never know what's going to happen. I don't care how many people hear my songs, care that the right people hear my songs. And, you know, this is, I think it's going to be one of those songs that people always go back to every holiday. It's just such a unique version of Oh Holy Night.
That's awesome. Yeah. Ali. Yeah. She definitely has some famous parents. Not as big as you can get, and that's all we'll say here.
yep.
So yeah, love that song, Oh Holy Night. Perfect timing here for the holidays. You also have a holiday version of the other song that you put out, No Present Like the Time, which I enjoy that song as well, like the holiday treatment you put on that one.
Thanks, brother. You know, we just kind of, you know, I put that song out a year ago, right after The Voice, and then we ended up just taking it for ads to country radio. So, you know, we all know the phrase, there's no time like the present. Our hook change on it, which I think was witty, was there's no present like the time, which basically means time is a gift, especially if you've experienced loss. If you're experiencing loss right now, you know how important time is and that we should make the most out of it. So that song is really important. Just now going for ads after the song being out for a year, I thought, okay, it's the holidays. We should put out a holiday version, you know? And so I'm glad that we have that version out there to make some holiday playlists and kind of refresh the song. So I'm glad you dig it.
And it does work well as the holiday treatment on there. So I'm glad you did that. Another song that you put out over the summer, I really like this one. This one's fun. The Jello Shot song and video. That's a catchy one, man. Party song.
Yeah, man, that's my old man, my dad coming out and me, all the weird party stuff. But the label, you know, when I signed with them, they're like, Jay, you know, you have all these heartfelt songs, you know, which obviously you're always going to release songs like that and be known for that. And that's the biggest part of what you do. But you're this fun guy as well, you know, which, I, you know, not a lot of people get to see that unless you come to my live show. So they're like, what's the most fun song you've ever written? And I was like, as a joke, I shared Jello Shot. I was like, they're going to think this is the stupidest song ever. And they're like, yep, that's the one. Let's make a music video. I was like, what? Okay. So off to the races. Here we go. My manager, which I have an awesome manager now. I love her. She's my biggest champion and a beast. She never sleeps. But she's like, how about we put you in like a really nice black tux and then I'll get a kiddie pool and we'll fill it with 500 Jello Shots and that would be the cover art. I was like, yep, we're doing that. That kind of set the tone for the whole thing, man. And now, you know, I do it with the band live at every show. We just did it at it was actually like a very like prestigious gala in Bakersfield, California. And I'm like, screw this. I'm going to get them out of their seats, up to the front, dancing. And we started off the whole set with Jello Shot. I swear to God, first song, and I was grinding, like literally on my hands grinding in this old lady's lap. That is the power of Jello Shot.
So that's a fun song, fun video. And your wife's in that video, right?
Yeah, she sure is. Any chance I get to put her in a video, I'm going to do it from now on. So she's in a couple of things. We also have a song called Mustang on Muntire together. She was a writer on, so I got her in that video too. But when you got a hot wife, you got to have her in your music video. It's just like
absolutely pretty obvious. Jello Shots. Yeah. I can't remember last time I had a Jello Shot. It's been a while. I never made them when I was in college or even after. I was too lazy to. I didn't have the foresight
you have to plan ahead. It's like meal prepping. Like no one really wants to do that. But if someone else does it for you, that's awesome. So, you know, now that people are starting to know that song, it's fun. People just bring up a tray of Jello Shots for the band. I'm like, all right, here we go.
There we go. Oh, man. And then you mentioned your wife. We talked about her, Kylie Morgan, who's also an artist. And I think just celebrated a year, right?
Yes. That went by so fast. We just celebrated our one-year wedding anniversary, celebrated in Maui, which is beautiful. If you haven't gone to Maui, you need to. It was bucket list for me. I have, I think, two more states I need to hit. I need to hit Montana and Alaska, and then I'm done with the U.S. But, yeah, 1 year with her. We were actually supposed to get married last year on Fort Myers Beach. That's another long story, but that's home away from home. We actually know all the owners that are breaking ground on the Margaritaville there on Fort Myers Beach. Became like family to us, very, very close friends. And they have a venue there, invited us to get married there. So that was the plan. And then Hurricane Ian came through and wiped out our wedding venue the week of our wedding.
I
was on The Voice at the time. Kylie had a single on country radio. And so we just started saying yes to all these interviews because it was an opportunity to shine a light on Fort Myers, right? And, you know, we actually ended up instead of getting married that weekend, we had a Fort Myers Beach Relief concert and sent a ton of money their way and helped them. Really, really sad thing. But what's beautiful about all of it is there's a venue inland, Fort Myers, that wasn't affected. They heard us on a radio station or a news interview or whatever, and they reached out and they gifted their venue to us for our wedding. We got married on Thanksgiving weekend last year. And so, yeah, that was the start of our marriage. Just like that's how it went down. I was just like, man, if it's lucky for you to have rain on your wedding, then we should go, you know, get some scratch off right now. hurricane, let's go. So yeah, it's been a journey with her. She is we're 9 years apart, and I lived three lives before her probably, but I'm always inspired by her. She's always had her eye on one objective, to be a successful country artist, and she's doing it, you know. So I've been doing the philanthropy path for the last several years, and she's stuck to country. So now that I'm doing the artist thing, I'm really following her lead and learning a lot from her. And she teaches me every day. So it's a pretty cool scenario for us, man. We're very blessed.
Hey, congratulations, man. I'm all about the marriage stuff. I think we, me and my wife just celebrated 6 years back in October. So,
dang, let's go. Congrats.
I think we're probably similar age. You might be, I'm 35. I think you might be a year or two older.
Yep, yep, yep. Old men now.
That's right, man. That's right. Well, we're all about that. And hopefully you have kids on the radar in the future.
Well, man, I got baby fever, but Kylie's not there yet. So I'll be patiently waiting. Even if I'm in a rocking chair, having to wait up for my kids to come home one day, then I'll do that. Whenever she's ready, I'm ready.
That's funny. All right. So these next questions are what we close with and ask everyone. So first question. What would you tell your 21-year-old self?
Don't do it. yeah, man. You know, I used to have, like, we all have regrets, right? And think like, what if, you know, but now I'm just like, you know, it happened, made me who I am. But if I could go, I would say don't do it many times. I had all my tattoos are cover-ups. I got my first tattoo when I was drunk. I got married and divorced. I would just say don't do it, bro.
All right, next question. What are you drinking lately? And if you don't drink alcohol, it could be anything refreshing you like to drink.
Man, I've gone through so many seasons of my alcohol indulgences. I am now a Tito's and water guy. I know it sounds like I'm a murderer. I swear to God, I'm a good guy. I went through a season of just bourbon. I loved Angel's Envy. Then it was like different types of beer and IPAs. I drank Coors Light for like 2 years straight. And then suddenly, this is my wife. I would say this to her face. She is so mean sometimes. I took off my shirt in our bedroom in privacy, and she just looked at me. She smiled. And she goes, "You need to be done drinking beer." And that was how I cut off beer. And so my father-in-law, he just drinks Tito's and water. He somehow stayed fit his whole life. And I'm just like, I guess that's the answer. So, and I don't know how it happened, but I felt like I love the taste of Tito's now. So Tito's and water.
Tito's and water. And as you know, this is Rock Down South. So what is something, or maybe a couple of things that come to mind, that you love about the South?
There's so many things I love about South. For me, you know, the philanthropy stuff, I grew up in the church. I was a music director at churches. I always felt like I was walking on eggshells. And as much good that's accomplished in churches and church buildings, it wasn't for me. You know, and in the South, and especially in country music, I can be a light in a dark place. I can be myself. Southern people are as real gets. And especially, you know, in our genre of country rock music, you know, I can be talking about God 1 minute on stage. The next minute, I can be half drunk with a drink in my hand. I love that. The people are just like real, honest, authentic human beings in the South.
I couldn't agree more. Hey, thank you so much, Jay, for being a part of the show today. Where can people find and connect with you online?
Yeah, jayallenofficial.com is the website, which is like the hub. You can find everything there. All the socials are Jay Allen Music. And then now I'm starting to point people to thenightofhope.com. We partnered with The Night of Hope, and we're putting on a spring headlining tour, aiming for like 41, 42 dates this spring, and partnered with them to, you know, I've always been raising funds for Alzheimer's, and I will always do that. But now we've been hearing stories about people that are reversing their dementia, or if they have onset, any sort of signs of dementia, they're changing their lifestyle and they're reversing it. So we made friends with the lady that did that. She started this foundation, The Night of Hope. And so we partnered with her. She's our sponsor. And so we're putting together a tour called The Night of Hope Tour. So thenightofhope.com, and then I always point people towards alz.org, which we partnered with the National Alzheimer's Association years ago to help raise funds for to fight against that disease. So jallenofficial.com, thenightofhope.com, and alz.org.
Thank you so much for listening to the show today. We hope y'all enjoyed this episode. I had a great time chatting with Jay. He's such an amazing artist in person and a real force for good in this world. And I was really glad we could connect, and I hope to see him play live here pretty soon. So make sure to go follow Jay Allen on all of his social media pages and check out his new Christmas rendition of O Holy Night that he just released with Ali Colleen, as well as his Christmas version of No Present Like the Time. You can find all our content at rockdownsouth.com, and make sure to go follow us on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter for the latest updates. Leave us a 5-star review if you can. We would really appreciate it. And as always, the views and opinions expressed by our guests are theirs and don't necessarily reflect our own. I'm Mark, and you've been listening to Rock Down South. See y'all next time.